God could rescue me. Only God could set me free. Only God. Only God. Only God.
Hello, welcome to Only God Rescued Me, my journey from satanic ritual abuse. I'm Lisa Meister, your host, and I am very happy to bring on today survivor Katie Brown. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you, Lisa. Good to be here.
I am so happy to have you. Thank you for coming. And you have a beautiful picture of a warrior today, and you were telling me a little bit about that. And can you explain it to our listeners?
I don't know if I could do it again without breaking down. But my youngest son, who passed away in 2022, he had a journal, and I was reading it, and he said that I was a warrior.
That is just amazing. And you found the perfect picture to go along with that. And he is absolutely right. And so today is a great day to tell the story of Katie Brown Warrior. As you remember growing up, before everything else came out, how did you feel about growing up? Like in my world, it was like, oh, I was the perfect family, but how did you see it?
Well, first of all, I grew up in foster care.
Okay.
So there's nothing normal about foster care.
How old were you when you got into it?
I was 8 years old. And along with my two sisters and my brother, but I was the youngest. So we ranged in age, I think, from like I was 8, and I think my oldest sister, I'll say maybe she was maybe 13 or 14, I believe. But I couldn't tell you what their birthdays are because we didn't really grow up together. And I don't even know where they are right now. I know one of my sisters passed away from ALS, the one that was closer in age to me. So before going into foster care, my mother was married to my father. Okay. So you want to know the memory before I started having flashbacks? Or
yeah, just how you viewed it while you were growing up.
We were sharecroppers. So we were very, I don't want to make it sound pitiful, but we were very poor. Okay. We picked cotton. We worked in tobacco. You know, things like that. We did not, I mean, I can't really remember going to a grocery store. We grew our own vegetables. We hunted for food. You know, of course, we lived in a rural area, so we had a rabbit box, and, you know, and we ate a lot of fish, you know, because there were ponds here and there, so we would fish. Ate a lot of squirrels, rabbits, even possum. In fact, our Thanksgiving dinner was possum and sweet potatoes. But my mother could make anything taste good. She was a very good cook. I mean, if you're hungry, you know, you're hungry enough, food like that can taste like steak, really. I mean, so, yeah, she was a very good cook. So back to thinking about what it was like when my mother was with my father. He was very mean. We were scared of him. Well, I know us kids were scared of him. I don't know if my mother was, but he was mean. So my mother left him when I was around 3 years old. That's what she told me. And then she met my stepfather, who was his family's from Florida. So, she got together with him and started having children with him. And I had thought that they weren't married, but when I looked into it, they were married, but I couldn't find a divorce, any kind of documentation for divorce from my father. I couldn't find that. So I don't know, but maybe back then people, got married, and then married somebody. I mean, I don't know. I couldn't find that she was divorced, okay? I just thought they were living together. I didn't know they were married. But so she had, so anyway, my stepfather was an alcoholic, okay? He was a mean alcoholic. When he was sober, he was a different person. He was actually, I don't want to say likable, but he was a different person, like Jekyll Hyde. So anyway, my mother had two sons by him. We still had the same lifestyle. We were sharecroppers and all that. That was all the same. And I said he was an alcoholic. Okay, so we were evicted from the house we were living in. Excuse me. We were evicted because, of course, we didn't pay the rent. What happened was my stepfather, we would pick cotton, make money, and then he would go buy moonshine with the money. So we didn't have the rent money. And I remember the landlord came up to the door and told, was talking to my mother and stepfather, said, you have so many days to pay the rent or you're going to have to get out. So it wasn't paid. So my stepfather found this vacant house on a dirt road, rural area. We didn't know who rented it. We just moved in. We just moved in. And it didn't have electricity, or anything. The only heat we had was from the fireplace, and my mother would cook on the fireplace. We had kerosene lamps. My stepfather got drunk, okay, and he got in the car and left us. He left us, and didn't come back. He got into an argument with my mother, because he was drunk. And so we were out, in the middle of nowhere, out way out in the country. And my mother walked up. I don't remember. I don't know how far the house was from us, but she walked up there to use their phone to call her sister, who was my aunt, of course. Told her to come get us, just the kids. Not my stepfather's kids. She had two sons, they were little, and then the four of us by my father. She asked her to come get us, and let us stay with her until, the situation got better, with the living conditions and with my stepfather. So she came to get us. And I remember that night it was raining, and my mother was sitting in a chair in front of the fireplace, and she was like wringing her hands. And I went over and I said, I don't want to go. Okay, this is hard. My brother had to come in there and pull me had to pull me away from my mother. And I was screaming. And he carried me out to the car and put me in the car. So she lived in a different city. And so anyway, feel like I'm dragging this out, but anyway, my mother came like I don't know, a few days later, and my stepfather was with her. And my aunt called the police. And the police told my mother that we would have to go to court, and the judge would decide who would get custody of those four kids by my father. And my aunt was, she was mean, okay. She got custody
Wow.
of me and, well, you know, they kind of switched it around. We had, because my mother had brothers, so, you know, they kind of split us up between the aunts and uncles. And unfortunately, I got stuck with my mother's sister. It was a, you know, a temporary thing until they could find foster homes, right?
Yeah.
So, fast forward to right before I went into foster care, my aunt had made me sleep on the porch with the dogs.
Oh.
And I had sores all over me from mosquito bites, you know, like the big yellow scabby. So, of course, I had a social worker, and I had been telling her about things that my aunt was doing, like if she made dinner, lunch, or whatever, she would make me stand by the table and watch them eat and tell me that if there is anything left when we get finished, you can have it, unless the dogs get it first.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, like, you know, we look, you know, it was out in the country, so we had to, you know, well, not me, because I didn't get to go, but, you know, you have to go to the biggest town nearest you to shop or whatever. And when she would do that, when she would go to do that, she would take all her kids, she would leave me there and lock me out of the house, no matter if it was 100 degrees or, you know, 25 degrees. It didn't matter.
Wow.
And I remember one time when she did that, I got so hungry. And there was a tree, a fig tree that was loaded. It was loaded with figs, right? And I ate so many figs, and I will not eat a fig now for nothing.
I bet.
So,
Okay.
anyway, I was just want to give a little background on what she was like, okay? That was routine with her, you know, and making me sleep on the porch. So, and I had told my social worker, but you know, they don't believe you unless they see it themselves, right? So she showed up one morning unexpectedly, and I was out there on the porch asleep with the dogs.
Which
And
you had
she,
told her.
yeah. And she looked at me. She said, "Have you been out here all night?" I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Come on, get up." And she knocked on the door, and she told, my aunt came to the door. She said, "Pack her things right now. She's leaving." So I'm trying to remember how old I was, how long I was with my aunt. It was over a year. It was over a year. So, you know, maybe 9, like that, 10. I don't know exactly. So that social worker took me to the first foster home. And I was taken to a doctor because I was so malnourished and jaundiced and, covered with sores and everything. It was a man and woman. They were in their 60s, the foster mother, she wanted me to cook, like, especially on Sundays. She would want me to cook. And I didn't know anything about cooking, So I remember one time I was going to make cornbread and I didn't, she had already put it in the cornmeal in the canister. So it wasn't like I could read the bag, for the instructions. So I didn't know what temperature to put it on or what I was supposed to put in it, how much. And back then, we had the phones. Well, there was a wall phone, where, the rotary where you had to actually move it all the way around, with your finger, And I actually called the operator and asked her how to make cornbread.
Oh.
Yeah, I actually did that. And
Did you?
she walked me through it,
Did she really?
Yeah, she walked me through it. She was so nice. And I guess back then, they didn't question. Maybe they didn't question that kind of thing with a child telling you, I'm such and such an age, I'm by myself, and I'm supposed to cook while they're at church, and I'm supposed to, have it ready when they get back, or I'm going to be in trouble. I'm in a foster home. I mean, I guess they didn't report things like that back then.
Yeah.
So I was the cook and the housekeeper. I don't want to sound like that I'm saying that all foster parents are bad. But the foster parents I had, they had ulterior motives. It wasn't because they wanted to help a child. That wasn't it.
Right.
It was either they wanted the money or they wanted free labor or, sexual reasons. Okay, I'll just say that. Anyway, they don't, foster home is temporary. It's a temporary situation. Every foster home is temporary, right? So then I was moved to the second foster home. She had a day nursery. So I had to work taking care of children when I came home from school. And she had this whip. It was like a horse whip that she kept hanging in the hallway. And I had gotten a really bad, I think it was a bladder infection. It could have been a kidney infection. I can't remember if it was a kidney infection or a bladder infection, but I lost control of, I couldn't control it,
Yeah.
So I was wetting the bed, and at school, sometimes I'd have accidents.
Oh.
And she decided she was going to use that whip on me because, she just blew up at me. Like, you know better. You're too old to be doing that.
Yeah.
So she used it on me. But my social worker took me to a doctor and I had an infection. and I had to take these big brown pills that were real hard to swallow. But that took care of the problem, you know, eventually. So that was the second. So the third foster home, now this one, had really bad memories of this one. At first, you know, she was a widow, you know. You know, most of these women, widows, they were seem to be in their 60s for some reason. I liked her at first, you know, but you really don't know somebody till you actually live with them, right? She went to, I don't know if I should mention the kind of church she went to. Anyway, she went to a certain church. But I don't want to get ahead of myself, you know. With what I remembered right now, because, you know, that's later. That I mean, I wasn't aware at the time of anything, right? Because every time something would happen, they would make me forget it, you know. Oh, let me go back to I forgot something. The first foster home. I want to mention something. The one that she wanted me to cook. Okay. I think I was in the fourth or fifth grade. It's hard for me to remember exactly, okay, that it was the fourth or fifth grade. So I was at school one day, and this man came in the classroom, and he was talking to my teacher, and I couldn't hear what he was saying, but they were looking at me. And she called me up to her desk, and she told me to go with that man. And I had no idea who he was. You know, he was nice dressed, you know, wore a suit. I get, you know, I guess I thought he worked for the school. You know, maybe he came from the office. I didn't know. I was just told to go with him, right? So I went out of the classroom with him. We were walking down the hall, and he took me to this room. He opened the door, and it was dark in that room, except there was this window, but it was small. It was like up toward the ceiling, not lower. It was like up toward the ceiling. So it was kind of dark in there. And he pushed me in there and closed the door. And then there was another man in there. And he was saying, we heard you've been talking about things, and you were warned not to do that. And I said, I haven't been talking to anybody. He said, well, that's not what we heard. And I got angry. I said, you know, because they were blocking the door. I said, get out of my way. He said, you know what? We could make you disappear, and nobody would ever know what happened to you. Is that what you want? Do you understand what I'm saying? And I got scared because, of course, these are two grown men, right? And I said, yes. You know, what else could I say? He
Did you
said,
always remember this?
no.
This came back later.
Yeah, maybe I should have mentioned that,
Oh, that's okay.
but you know, I didn't want to forget to mention because that was significant.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, he said, the next time we have to come back here, what he said, if we have to come back here again, it's going to be the last time.
Wow.
So we went out of the room, and we were walking down the hall, and he stopped, and he said, do you understand what I, you know, that this better not happen again? And I said, yes, you know, and took me back to the classroom.
Wow.
So, anyway, I got things popping up on my screen. So anyway, I was in the third foster home. So, I can't go into detail about that because it's, I mean, at the time, I didn't notice any. I mean, of course, I wasn't aware, consciously aware. So, the only thing that I remembered was my arm was injured. My right arm was swollen. Whenever, they were going to move me to another foster home, and I was putting my things in a car, my social worker's car, and I remember my arm was swollen, really big, and it was hurting. And I do remember I wasn't given medical care. I didn't see a doctor. I know that much. But it was like they wanted to get me out of there fast. It was like all of a sudden. So the fourth foster home, it was a man and woman in their 60s, okay, lived out in the country. And I've always remembered this, that my foster father was continually, trying to touch me, just I'd come home from school, and if my foster mother wasn't there, I would, get in the closet. I'd pile things on top of me trying to hide, or I would walk down the highway, or go. There was a vacant house not too far down the road. I would go there, or I would go in the woods, or whatever, I had to do to stay away until she came home. Because he would, he was always after me. So I told my social worker about that. But my foster father said, if you tell, they're not going to believe you because I'm an upstanding member of the community. They're not going to believe you, and you'll be the one to get punished. Not me, right? So my social worker took me down to the defects office. Yes, it's called defects back then. I don't know. I don't remember. But, that's what it was, or what it's called today. And, the director, I guess she was the director, the head lady there, she called me in her office, and she told me, tell me the truth, and whatever you say in here will be between me and you. And I told her, told her the truth, about what my foster father was doing. And she said to me, I can't believe that you would make up lies about these good people that took you in and gave you a home, clothed, fed you, clothed you. And then you lie. And she said, if you can't tell the truth, there is a place we can send you. You're not going to lie because you won't have as much freedom because they have locked doors there. It's more like an institution. I mean, in my mind, I'm like, well, what's worse? I mean, could it be worse than what I'm putting up with now? It'll be worse than
Seriously.
that. And I said, I've told the truth. And she said, okay, well, if that's the way you want it, we can move you to, it was a girl's home, okay? It was a girl's home in a different city. And I'll never forget, as my social worker was driving toward that city, she kept saying to me, as she was driving, I was sitting in the back seat, it's not too late for you to tell the truth, and we can turn around and go back and
Oh,
take you back.
wow.
I said, I told the truth, and she just kept on doing that. And then eventually she gave up. And we arrived at the girls' home. It was a old was like an older building. I know it's an old building. It was a long building, you know, not, it wasn't separate stories, you know, it was only one story, but it was a real long building. There were like, I think like, you know, maybe 12 girls there. They showed me around, and you know, they had a big dining room, and they had like a chapel that was connected. And then the director, you know, talked to me, and I told him, you know, why? Because he said, why are you here? And I told him, and I said, but I guess you don't believe me either. He said, why wouldn't I believe you? You know how many girls have told me similar stories to that? You know, and I was just amazed, you know, that he actually believed me, right? So yeah, I was put in that girl's home, and I was there until I graduated from high school. There about 3 years.
Wow. Were
Then,
you safe there?
yeah,
Good.
yeah. We couldn't go anywhere without a house parent, you know. I wasn't abused. Okay.
Good.
I can't remember really anything bad about it. It was very structured. Maybe, you know, friction with some of the other girls, but that's about it, you know.
Yeah.
It was very structured, and it was just what I needed. It was safe. And you know, they were right. I didn't have a lot of freedom, you know, but I was safe. So that was the most important thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, before I graduated, I got a job. Now, my aunt, my goal was to make enough money to, because you know, I knew that I was going to have a place to go. I got, you know, when you turn 18, you know, you're out, you know.
Yeah.
So, but you know, I was working at this restaurant, and I was only making $1 an hour, if you can believe that,
Oh.
you know. And you know, back then, you know, that's what waitresses, most waitresses made, $1 an hour plus tips. The thing is, that wasn't a full service restaurant. I'll just say the restaurant, it was Morrison's. So, you know, people go down the line with their tray, and they pick out what they want and everything, and then they take their tray to the table. So it's not like you go to the table and do full service. So I didn't make enough money really to make a difference, as far as being able to, you know, and I didn't have a car, you know, certainly didn't have enough to pay rent and buy a car, you know. There was this girl that I worked with at Morrison's, and I was talking to her about it. She said that I could live with her until, you know, I had other arrangements. So when I, you know, graduated and everything, and had to leave, I moved in with her. And we were at the skating rink one night, and I saw this guy, and it was just like, it's hard to explain, but when I saw him, even though I didn't know him, you know, there was a connection. Who, you know, and that man became my husband later. Were married 25 years until he passed away in 2000. He was such a good man. We had three children. We never had much materially, you know, but I mean, that didn't, you know, that's not really what I was looking for. I mean, if I wanted a rich man, I could have, looked for a rich man. That's not what I was looking for,
Right.
And, I took my marriage vows seriously, I mean, every marriage is going to have some problems. I mean, you can't say, well, I want to divorce you because you snore, or you're sloppy, you don't clean up after yourself, or all these kind of things. I mean, that's no reason. And of course, my husband was faithful to me. Okay, I mean, if he was, and even if he was abusive, okay, maybe if he was physically abusive, maybe I would have had an excuse to divorce him. Being unfaithful or something like that, but that was he that wasn't the way he was. And he had a really big heart. He was interested in environmental issues. There was a mountain here where I live. The Cherokee tribe here wanted to save because it had a lot of Indian artifacts, and they were going to, bulldoze that mountain down and put condominiums there. So he was interested in participating and helping them save that mountain,
Wow.
So I'll back up a little bit. In 1991, I was 34 years old. One of the first things that I remember happening was I was in the kitchen, and I could hear my neighbors shooting guns. And I just automatically started, it was in the summer, and we didn't have, central heat and air, so I had all the windows up, and I started closing, like, without even realizing it, I was closing all the windows and the doors, and I was shaking. And then, when I got all the windows and doors closed, I had this flashback. First time I'd ever remembered it, of my stepfather chasing us through the woods, shooting at us with a shotgun.
Wow.
And it was that trigger of hearing those gunshots. And every July 4th, I have a hard time with the fireworks. So I had to put on headphones. And I really feel sorry for dogs
Oh, yeah.
on July 4th because they have such supersonic hearing that, that has to really hurt their ears. But yeah, July 4th is hard for me.
Is
So
that the first flashback you'd ever had, or had you had flashbacks before then?
that's the way I remember it starting, and that kind of like opened up. I think that opened up other things, and then I started having nightmares, but now this is gonna be hard. I don't even know how to explain this. The flashbacks started being I think I know why that particular flashback with the gun is associated, because my stepfather, well, how can I say this? The flashbacks were about UFOs. I mean, I'll just say that. I'll just say it was about UFOs, okay? And about being abducted by aliens. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. That's how in one of those times, my stepfather was shooting his gun at him. So I think that's why it's associated. But then, so I was kind of really, I was convinced that I was an alien abductee for a while. It was because, I was having all these flashbacks about it, and I mean, I called my, at that time my sister was still alive, and I called my sister and I was like, "Do you remember this?" And she finished the story.
Oh, wow.
She finished the story before I, she was older than me, right? And yeah, and she said, "Yes, I do." And then, and Bert came. Oh, I said his name. Oh, sorry. And my stepfather came out, with his gun and was shooting, But then, as the years went on, and I started having more flashbacks, I was re remembering as I got older, right? Because, see, that was happening when I was like 6 or 7, these flashbacks at first that I was having. So, like, when I was 6 or 7, but then I was remembering as I got older, the foster home I mentioned, the fourth one, and I was 14, okay? And I knew, okay, when I had that flashback, I knew that this man, this preacher, it was always him. It was always him, right? Like, the church we went to when I was little, before I went to foster care, he was the preacher. He took, and all this came back in flashback, okay? He would take my mother sometimes, and I would see her, and she would be like in a trance, okay? Like, she'd be walking, like her eyes would be wide open. She wouldn't be blinking. Almost robotic, like almost robotic, and just, and I would call out her name, Mama, and she wouldn't even look at me, like she didn't hear me, and she just followed him right on out the door. Sometimes he would take my oldest sister. I saw her being taken. Now, I don't remember seeing him take my brother or my other sister, but I do remember seeing him take my mother and my oldest sister.
So this is the preacher.
Yes. And
So even
yeah.
when you were in the foster homes,
Right.
it was still the same preacher.
Yes.
So wherever
Well,
you were, he was the center of it.
he, not in all of them, but he was the one who always came and, I'm not going to use the word taken. I was kidnapped. Okay. Just say it like it really is. I was kidnapped. Okay. Kidnapped.
Right. Yeah, call it what it is. Yeah.
Tortured. Trafficked.
So this was an SRA ring.
Yes. Yes. The flashback shifted. When the ones that I remember when I was little, okay, I could, it looked like UFO abduction. That's, at my 6-year-old childlike mind, because that's what he wanted me to see it as. Okay, it was hypnosis and mind control. Okay, that's how he wanted me to see it. So I wouldn't know the truth about what was really going on and who he really was. So, but when I started remembering the ones when I was older, then I was able to understand that it was him all along that was coming and kidnapping me, stalking me every time I would move to a different foster home. He always knew where I was. But he was the preacher in that church when in the foster home. And don't there was another church, but I don't know if he was visiting. But in the fourth foster home, he was the preacher there. Okay. And my foster mother, in the fourth foster home, she had a job. She worked, but she didn't always go to church. That, usually somebody would pick me up and take me to church, right? And now this is the first actual ritual that I remember the details from beginning to end. And it really was the flashback that put everything into focus for me. And I think it was on a Saturday. But, usually we went to church on Sunday, and I think maybe Wednesday night, I believe. So it wasn't a regular church day, And my foster mother said, "Well, I don't remember the lady's name that was going to pick. Well, so and so is going to pick you up at such and such time, and take you to church. They're having something going on at church, okay? And she'll pick you up." And I know it was in the afternoon, so she picked me up at the foster home. And there were two women sitting in the front seat, and I recognized them from the church. I know they went to that church. But I don't really think I knew them really, to remember their names. They weren't that familiar to me. And there was a little girl sitting in the back seat when I got in the car, right? She was really young, like she couldn't have been over 5 years old. Couldn't have been, if that. And I think I knew that little girl. For some reason, I'm thinking she was related to my foster mother somehow, but I don't know that for sure. But no, get down now. Get down. My cat's trying to get in on the action. she'll knock my mic off and everything. Anyway, the lady who, so she, before she started driving, she had a thermos. Now, this is the same lady who was in charge of children in the church. She was in charge, like if we went on trips, she was in charge of children, different ages, younger and teenagers. She was entrusted to be responsible for the children, I remember we went to camp, and just, and all that. She was in charge. So also she would have these get-togethers at her house for different groups, aged children. And I remember how, I was a teenager at the time, so she would have, we're teenagers, and she would always have this big bottle of punch sitting on the counter. And she would always say, "I made punch. Help yourself, and we didn't know it was fight. Okay.
Right.
So, of course, I'm not sure what it was fight with. I mean, maybe alcohol, I don't know for sure, but and then There were men that would come, okay, when we were intoxicated, right? And they would take us into the bedrooms, you know, stuff like that. So, anyway, she was driving, but before she started driving, she had a thermos, you know, kind of her MO, you know, and she poured some what was in the thermos into a couple of cups. And she gave it to me and the little girl. She said, drink all of that, okay? Drink it all. And, you know, when she saw us start to drink it, she started the car and started driving to the church, right? So we were kind of, you know, it was a little bitter edge. So we were like sipping like slowly. She said, hurry up, you know, hurry up and drink that before we get to the church, right? So we got to the church, you know, and she told us to finish it, finish drinking it, and we did. And, you know, I was feeling kind of fuzzy, mean, I didn't know what it felt like back then to be, well, I guess I wasn't actually drunk, but, you know, I was feeling the effects, right? I mean, it wasn't like I couldn't walk or anything. I mean, but it was having an effect on me. And, you know, we got out of the car. I noticed there weren't that many cars in the parking lot, right? Because it's Saturday and it's not a regular church day. And there's like what we call a kind of like a carport next, you know, connected with the church, actually built in on the side. And there was this like white, I'll call it a moving truck, maybe something like that. I mean, it didn't look like, you know, I mean, I don't really know. I mean, it didn't look like a U-Haul truck, but, you know, it was a big white, kind of like a big van, like a big oversized van. And we went in, we sat down, all of us sat on the same pew, okay? And I was sitting further down from the aisle. They had the little girl sitting between them, these two ladies. And so, you know, time passes, and I start, you know, well, okay. In the side, oh, there's a side door, and I see they're bringing in this big object, you know, and it's dark. It's like a dark colored. It has a dark color. But first, I was thinking it was a table, you know, or something. And these men carried it. They put it up like, you know, there's the pulpit, and then behind the pulpit, right? Like up next to the wall, between the pulpit and the wall, they put it there, right? And I, you know, I couldn't really see what was going on exactly from where I was sitting, you know. And then I heard this woman. It was like she was in pain, like she was moaning. She was, you know, crying out, you know, not screaming, but, you know, like she was in pain, right? And then that went on for a while, it seemed like hours. And then those two women, well, one of the ladies had gone on up there while that was going on. She came back and she was talking to the little girl. And then she took her hand, like, you know, want to lead her up to the where that was going on, right? And the little girl was turning around looking at me, and she was screaming and crying, you know, like, help me, you know. She was scared.
Sure.
I mean, you know, this little, even this little girl knew, okay, I don't, you know, instinctively that something, evil was going to happen. Okay? She instinctively knew it. She was afraid for a reason. And I couldn't stand to hear her screaming and crying. And I jumped up, right, off the pew. And I started trying to make my way to her, right? That lady still has her by the hand, pulling her now. She's pulling her. And I get like halfway to her, and all of a sudden, these people surround me and, grabbing, my arms, overpowering me, and, especially my right arm, okay, and just manhandling me and, forcibly moved me back over to the pew, slammed me down, and said, "Don't get up again till we call you." And a couple of men stood behind me as I was sitting there. And I was holding my arm because it was hurting so bad, I was trying to keep it from moving. I was holding it. And then they came and told me to come up now. It's time for me to go up there now. So I went up there, and well, that church had not the windows were, it was like colored glass, not stained glass, but like thick colored glass, with different shapes. So you couldn't see it out or in those windows. Okay. And, they had like on one side of the pulpit, they had me and a few more people my age, I guess. And then on the other side, they had the men and boys, teenagers and men. That object that was brought in, there was a woman on that laying on that object. And the preacher. And the little girl was standing like in front of me, not far in front of me, maybe just a few feet. There were some people standing behind her. And I was thinking, I need to grab her and we need to get out of here. That's what I was thinking, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And that was going through my mind. And then I looked over the door. There were like people guarding the doors, and I saw that preacher take what looked like a big cleaver. And well, first he delivered that ba he did de he delivered a baby. That woman had a baby that was laying on that object. All right. Anyway, okay. So he delivered the baby, and I don't remember if it was a boy or a girl. I think it was a boy. And he took that cleaver, and he. He cut the baby in half. And I think before he was reading scriptures about, when they came before Solomon, I think it was Solomon, there was a disagreement over whose baby, these two women, they were, both claiming that was their baby. And he said, "What do I have to do? Cut the baby in half," right?
Right.
And I think he was reading, seems like I remember him reading about that. So I think that was the first time I'd ever heard that before.
Yeah.
And so he held, okay, so now the baby's in two pieces, all right? So he held the top part of the baby over the little girl's head. And the blood is coming down over her head, right on her hair,
Yeah.
her face. But before, I have to back up. This is important. Before he did that to the baby, before that, when I was thinking, I have to save this little girl, I have to save that baby, right? And I'm thinking in my mind, how can I do it? Should I just rush him, run into him, knock him down? And when I'm thinking this, he turns and looks at me. You know, this is after, okay, I was still, I mean, my arm is injured, right? And he turns and looks at me and says, "Are you going to try to stop me? Better do it now, but you won't make it out of here alive." Right? And when he said that, these people came up behind me. And I looked over my shoulder and I saw that, you know, and I knew that I couldn't do anything, right?
Yeah.
And I was trying to distance myself. And the reason I mentioned those windows is because I looked at the windows and I was thinking, I'm going to remember this. I will remember this. I was telling myself, I will remember this. I have to. I was saying it over and over because I was afraid that I wasn't going to remember it, right? All right, so anyway, I've already said what was done to, okay, so then after he did that, he took the little girl, okay, and he raped her on the floor next to that, I guess, altar. He raped her. And I don't want to go into much detail about what happened after that because it's very, he touched each one of us on our forehead, okay? And when he did, when he would touch you on your forehead, you know, you kind of lost your ability to, you know, think for yourself or act of your own will, and you know, it was like he had total control at that point. And I don't know how to say this without the baby was consumed. Okay, I'll say that. The baby was consumed. All right. I'm not going in detail about that. So when I had that flashback, it answered so many things for me, you know, and some other flashbacks that I had had, you know, it put the pieces together for me.
Yeah.
It totally changed the, you know, it well, it demolished the UFO abduction scenario. It totally demolished that, you know, altogether. But, you know, I was trying to decide which one was worse, you know, thinking I was abducted by aliens or that, you know, or the SRA. But of course, you know, SRA is worse, okay?
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, I was kind of angry at God at first when I started remembering these things. And I was like, why did you let that happen to me when I was just a little girl? I was, you know, was helpless and defenseless, you know. You know, why did that happen to me? You know, and then I'm thinking, you know, nobody's ever going to believe this, you know, and my family, I have to tell my family about this, you know, because it's going to affect me and they're going to see that. And how am I going to explain this to them, you know? And, you know, I would get up in the middle of the night because I was having nightmares. I'd get up and go to the kitchen and make a pot of coffee, and because I didn't want to finish the nightmare. I didn't want it to continue, I would go in the living room, turn the TV on, try to focus on something else, drink some coffee. It became like a flood. It was like a flood of flashbacks. It was just flooding at that point. After that flashback of that ritual, it was like flooding into my mind, and I was like, I no, stop, I can't, process all this at once. It's too much. It's just too much to process. I can't. And then, having nightmares too. And it, I was trying to explain it to my family, husband. He tried to be patient, he tried to be understanding. He was for a while, but then, he said, that, well, we were going to a particular church at that time, and they taught a certain thing. So he said that I was demonized.
Oh.
And I even called one of the elders, of the church, but that's what they call the minister. And I said, this is happening, I'm having these memories, nightmares, and can you just pray for me? Even if you don't believe me, could you just pray for me? And he more or less told me that, I must have done something to attract demons.
Oh.
He didn't say he was going to pray for me. He was just, like it was my fault that, I needed to ask forgiveness, and whatever it was I was involved in, I needed to repent, that I wouldn't, do it again. Okay. So naturally I stopped going to that church, okay? Because they, it seemed to get around in the church. They started, I noticed the difference in the people. They kept their distance from me.
Wow, I'm so sorry.
So like they didn't want to take my demons home with them, right? Something
Yeah.
like that, right?
Wow. Wow.
So maybe you can ask a question. I'm kind of stuck.
Yeah, so how did your husband respond to the deacon reacting that way?
Actually, my husband was on their side.
Oh,
Because
wow.
he was telling my children that I was demonized, and he said, "Let's go in here and pray for your mother." So he got my three kids together, and they went into a room, and they were, he said they were going to pray for me because I was demonized. And
Wow.
anyway, yeah, we did separate because I told him, I said, "Look, you're not helping me."
Yeah.
You're not helping the situation, okay? Now my kids are scared of me, okay? You said I was demonized. I'm having a hard enough time, I said, dealing with this, and why can't you stand by me? I mean, we took marriage vows, better or worse, okay? I mean, so I told him, I said, "You know what? We need to separate for a while, okay? Because I can't take you saying I'm demonized and dealing with this other two, okay, the flashbacks, and then dealing with what you're saying." And we did. We separated for it wasn't very long, okay? It was a short period of time.
Right.
And he apologized, after he came back and said he'd try to be more understanding, okay? And he was, okay? He was.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it was asking a lot, I mean, it's hard for you and your husband to understand,
Yeah.
but I mean, he'd been married to me for so long. He knew me very well. And I will say that I did, because I was having trouble sleeping at night, I went to a psychologist. I wanted to, get something to help me sleep. But, I didn't realize that psychologists can't prescribe medication. There, I didn't have, health care that would pay for that. So I had to go to a free clinic. And there was a psychiatrist there in the building. And this was very humiliating too. The psychologist that I went to, he said, "Would you volunteer to appear before a group of, I guess you call students, since you're getting free mental health care here, mental health care, kind of guilt tripping me, right? I mean,
Yeah.
so
Yeah, that's good.
I said, okay. I was thinking, well, what could happen, right? I mean, what could happen? That's so bad to do that." And so that psychologist took me in this room, and it had like a big glass window. And then outside that room, there were these chairs, and there were all these people. They were, I guess you call them students, or but they were. And I was sitting in the chair, and the psychiatrist was saying, "This lady, is saying this and that, happened to her, flashbacks, memories and nightmares and stuff like." And those people were looking at me like I was, from the moon,
Yeah.
like I was some circus freak or something.
Wow.
I mean, I felt so humiliated. But I did, he did prescribe something to help me sleep. Okay, that's why I went there mainly. But the thing is that it was so strong that the next morning I was like a zombie, and I was, supposed to get up, make breakfast, and get my kids off to school, and I slept later than I was supposed to, and I was dragging, and
Yeah.
I was like a zombie. So, that didn't work. Okay, that didn't work.
So how did you get healing?
Okay, well, it's been over 30 years since I had those original flashbacks. Of course, the hardest part of it was breaking down that barrier of, they put in that programming. This is what I believe. Okay, I mean, I'm no expert. I can't prove this. Okay, I don't know, but I believe that they put in that UFO abduction, false memories, right? Overlaid it over what really happened, right? So that if I did remember anything, it was like an insurance policy, I think. Like an
Sure.
insurance. Well, if she starts remembering, she's going to have to get through this first, right?
Yeah.
Going to have to break that down first. So it did. It took me many years to get to break that down. It did. And but when I started getting those flashbacks of when I was older, okay, that, That's when I figured it out. That's when I could see what happened. And of course, my faith, even, as a little girl, like when I was living with my aunt, when things were hard for me, when she was really abusive, I would go into the woods. And it was really like a sanctuary, and like God's creation, and I would sit down and maybe I would see a rabbit or a deer. I'd be looking, I would be thinking about how beautiful it was there, and I remember one time the sun was streaming down through the trees. I'm getting a little emotional. And I put my hand in the stream of light. And I was thinking, oh, how great you are, look what you can do, you're so great. I mean, look what you created, look at this beauty, and just putting my hand in that stream of light. And I felt so close to God when I was a child. It was like meditating, even though I mean, I wasn't really taught a lot of good things about God, to be honest. I mean, I was always taught I was going to burn in hell, but even, I mean, I had nightmares about that, to be honest. I had nightmares about burning in hell. I mean, go to church and then, come home and have nightmares about burning in hell. And my mother liked to tell us these bedtime stories. It sounded like Grimm's fairy tales,
Oh, wow.
there's this she would talk about Soap Sally. Was this old lady who at night she had this bag on her back, and she would go looking for children that wouldn't go to sleep at night, be quiet, and she would kidnap them and take them to her house in the woods, and she'd put them in this big pot and make soap out of them, Soap Sally, right? And then she would say, the devil was also walking around in the woods. Here we are living way out in the country. Okay. And when it gets dark, right? And, we didn't have, at this particular time when she was telling us that we didn't have a window pane. We didn't have a window pane. It was like a wooden door, and it was all the way open. So you could hear every noise outside that window. We live, real close to the woods, so we heard all the sounds. And she was talking about the devil, walking around with his pitchfork, and if he heard kids, being too loud or wasn't going to sleep like they were supposed to, he would get them with his pitchfork, things like that. And she would say, that old haint over there in the corner is going to get you if you don't go to sleep. She called them haints, so we were all like laying crossways on the bed because, we didn't have enough beds, so we were all laying crossways on the bed. So, I mean, I don't know how she expected us to go to sleep after that, after telling. I don't know, but I do believe that she was, well, I mean, I know because I saw taking them. What else? What else would it be? She, I don't know if it goes back to her childhood. Of course, I know my father was, well, you know what? I haven't even talked about him, have I? I mean, it goes back to my father. When I was, right before my mother left him, I was around 3 years old, and he took me out one day, a little distance from the house, where this man was waiting there. And the man asked him, "Have you decided if you want to sell your children?" And he said, "Yes, I want to sell all my children." including the baby, talking about me. And he was holding me at that time, right? Now, I don't know what agreement they had. I don't know what they gave my father. But anyway, my father almost immediately, literally handed me over to this man. And this man walked out to the highway, put me in the back seat of a car, drove down the road for a while, stopped, took me out of the back seat, carried me into the woods. There were a group of people in those woods, okay? And they came up to me and they were touching my face, you know, my hair, and they laid me on the ground and they took a small animal and they sacrificed it on top of me. And I can't really remember what kind of animal it was, you know, but it was a small animal. Okay. And of course I had blood all over me after that. And this woman, she had a bucket of water, and a cloth, and she washed it all off, all the blood off. And then this man, you know, took me back in the car, drove me back, you know, stopped where he had parked and carried me a certain distance from, you know, the house and put me down and told me to keep going to the, you know, walk back to the house. So we were sold into a cult.
Yeah.
And that man was not a preacher he sold us to.
Yeah.
That was not him. But somewhere along the line, there was a, we were turned over to, you know, different people, you know,
yeah,
including that preacher.
Right. So your healing came in through knowing who God was in the midst of it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I had very strong faith. I've always had strong faith. If I, you know, if I didn't have faith, I, you know, because at one point I was suicidal.
Yeah.
And you know, I came real close, and you know, I had to pray about it, and you know, I asked God, please give me strength to bear this and just help me get through it. I said, I'm going to put it in your hands because it's bigger than me, right? I'm dealing with things that are beyond my control, okay? And so I'm going to put it in your hands, and I'm going to have trust and faith that you're going to take care of it, and you're going to help me, give me the strength to get through it. So, you know, I mean, I pray about it all the time. I pray for my family. I pray for other survivors. Pray for children that are in that same situation, because it hasn't stopped.
Right.
You know, it hasn't stopped.
Right. Yeah.
And, I want Christians to know, you know, that this is not a partisan issue as far as that goes. And they need to know who their preachers are. They need to know what's happening at their churches when it's not a regular church day. They need, you know, to pay attention. They need to know who's in charge of their children. You know, because, you know, when you, because, you know, when you go to a church, oh, I'm safe here.
Yeah.
You're very trusting. You let your guard down.
Right.
So, but we have to be on guard. We have to be on watch, because churches are being infiltrated.
Yeah.
I mean, this happened over 60 years ago to me. And I mean, that wasn't the only church that's happened in, you know.
Right.
So,
oh, yeah.
So, you know, we have to be on guard as Christians. We have to have discernment, not be so trusting. I mean, you know, I mean, there's scriptures that say that. And we're in a spiritual war. We are in a spiritual war. We can't forget that.
That's
It's a
right.
Spiritual. I mean, all you got to do is just look around in the world. See, you know, it is a spiritual war.
Yep. Which is why you're there in your picture in the armor.
Yes, exactly.
You're fighting it.
That's right.
I
Well,
love how your son saw you that way. He didn't see you as a victim.
right.
He saw you as a warrior.
You know, he told me that one time on Facebook, people were talking about their mothers, and they said, "Who has a strong mother?" And he said, "I do."
Well,
He told me that.
love that. I love that he saw you.
Yeah.
He knew you.
Yeah, I didn't realize he saw me as being strong until I read his journal.
Yeah. You are. You are.
Well, it's not my strength, you know. There's no way I could do it by my strength.
Nope. But
I
you know
know
where
where
your
to.
strength comes from,
Exactly.
which is wisdom.
Yes. Certainly.
Yeah. Would you like to pray the Luciferi, shaking Luciferian prayer with me?
Sure.
All right. From where we're seated in Christ Jesus,
From where we're seated in Christ Jesus,
at the right hand of the Father,
at the right hand of the Father,
the Lord God Almighty says,
the Lord God Almighty says,
the time has come
the time has come
for the Luciferian kingdom to be shaken.
for the Luciferian kingdom to be shaken.
We decree,
We decree,
let the great shaking
let the great shaking
of all who worship Lucifer begin.
of all who worship Lucifer begin.
Your sorceries and sacrifices
Your sorceries and sacrifices
will not help you.
will not help you.
Your protection is removed.
Your protection is removed.
Let the shaking of the Luciferian kingdom increase.
Let the shaking of the Luciferian kingdom increase.
In Jesus' name, amen.
In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you so much, Katie, for being with us today.
Thank you. I
I
hope I didn't
mean,
ramble too much.
no, you didn't. It's not easy to get your whole life put together in just a couple hours.
Yeah.
Not easy at all. And you did a really good job.
Yeah, that's 60 years. I can't put that into 2 hours.
No, not very easily. And may God continue to bless you and keep you as you continue to walk in this life that he has given you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for listening, and God bless you.